And right now I'm joined on the phone by Jill Friedberg. She is an independent documentary filmmaker who spent 2 years in Oaxaca documenting the Democratic Teachers Movement there. In 2005, she finished the film Granito de Arena. She has been going back and forth this summer to Oaxaca to cover what's happening there, and she just got back last week. Hello, Jill.
Hi there.
Hi, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Maybe we could start out if you could just give us some general background on the current situation in Oaxaca.
The current situation in Oaxaca is a widespread popular movement that emerged after what was a fairly regular teachers' strike in the month of May, during which the current governor of the state of Oaxaca, who's very unpopular for reasons I can get into later, sent in his state police to attack the teachers who were camped in the streets of Oaxaca City with their children at 4 o'clock in the morning, and in a brutal police attack that left 192 people injured. The response after that, the immediate response by the people of Oaxaca was enormous in terms of solidarity for the teachers, and very shortly thereafter, what is called the Popular Assembly of the People of Oaxaca was formed, and what had been a teachers' strike evolved into this popular, statewide, diverse, broad movement, which has now taken as its single demand the resignation of the governor of the state of Oaxaca, Ulises Ruiz Ortiz. And it's a movement that includes housewives, campesinos, indigenous communities, other unions. The state health workers have now gone out on strike as well. And it's a movement that has enjoyed incredible popular support in following the attack on the teachers' encampment. There were a couple of marches, one of which participated over 500,000 people in the city of Oaxaca. So that's just sort of the broad background of where what's happening now began and who's participating.
Why has the government cracked down so hard on a teacher's strike?
Well, this particular government, I mean, the state of Oaxaca has a long, unfortunate history of having very corrupt and very repressive state governments. It's a state that's always been controlled by the PRI, political party, and this particular governor, Ulises Ruiz Ortiz, only entered post as governor 18 months ago, and in that short time, he has managed to win himself an impressive number of enemies, both through outright repression. Immediately after entering office, he orchestrated an attack on the one newspaper in Oaxaca that's an actually relatively objective newspaper and not always favorable to the governor. But he also launched an amazing public spending campaign on unsolicited so-called civic projects, remodeling parks and stadiums and that sort of thing, which were the last thing that the people of Oaxaca wanted or needed. This is one of the poorest states in the country of Mexico. It's one of the most indigenous states. And I think that when, you know, previous governors have dealt with teacher strikes by sort of letting them camp out in the streets, offering them a small percentage of what the teachers are demanding and then never really coming through with what they've agreed to give the teachers, and just sort of letting the teachers wear themselves out. And instead, this year, the governor decided that he would deal with this strike with what they call in Mexico mano dura, or the strong arm of the law. But obviously that backfired on him. He has continued to deal with the movement through extremely violent and repressive means, but now in a manner that's a little bit, it's dirtier, what they would call dirty war in Mexico. Rather than just sending in his police, he's been sending his thugs to carry out random attacks of violence against peaceful protests.
Let's talk more about that in a minute, some of the tactics that have been used. But first, why were the teachers striking? What were their demands? What are their demands?
Well, the educational situation in Oaxaca is very difficult. Teachers' salaries are low, especially for teachers who are teaching in rural communities in Oaxaca, where in many cases you'll find schools that might not have electricity, they might not have a roof, they certainly don't have any kind of pedagogical supplies. parents are expected to buy school supplies for their children. We're talking about families that can't even necessarily afford food, much less school supplies. A lot of children are arriving at school hungry, and teachers have to travel extremely long distances, often walking long to arrive at communities where they work. Their demands this year were similar to the demands that they offered at the table in previous years, which is not only a salary raise, but also free school breakfast, free textbooks, forms, and just general infrastructure for the school so that they have chalk and roofs and chairs and electricity in the school.
And you mentioned some of the dirty war tactics that the government of the state of Oaxaca is using against the teacher strike and now the wider movement that's sprung out of that. Give us some specific examples of what you mean by these tactics and this dirty war.
Well, the first week that I was down there, so that would have been the week of August 7th, more or less, the state government announced that it would begin arresting quote-unquote movement leaders. Now, I should mention that this is a movement without leaders. The popular assembly that has now incorporated the teachers within it is not a movement that has one or two identifiable leaders. But nevertheless, shortly after announcing that they would begin arresting movement leaders, they did just that. But in a manner, an example, the first leader who was arrested, Germán Mendoza Nube, who's a professor who has a long history of participating in the teachers' movement and other social movements in Oaxaca. He's in a wheelchair from violence that he was a victim of in the 80s for his participation in the movement, was grabbed outside of his house by plainclothes thugs in unmarked trucks, who took him out of his wheelchair, threw him in the back of a truck, and drove him away. And nobody knew of his whereabouts for 48 hours until he showed up in a prison in Puebla. The following day, there was a march to protest his arrest. In that march, two plainclothes police entered the march and opened fire on peaceful marchers, killing one of the men in the march who's married to a teacher who teaches on the outskirts of Oaxaca City. The day following that, another professor, teacher from outside of Oaxaca City, who also has a long history of participating in the movement, was arrested in the same manner. Plainclothes police with army-issue guns pulled up outside of his house, grabbed him, threw him in a truck. His whereabouts weren't known for 3 to 4 days, and he's in a rural part of Oaxaca. So those are just some examples of how that the governor has decided to respond to this movement, thinking that it will scare people off when it's really having the opposite effect.
I also understand that there's death squads that have been threatening people's lives. I actually tried to set up an interview with someone in Oaxaca today, and I was told he wasn't really doing interviews right now because there'd been some death threats issued by, I don't know who the death squads are associated with. Maybe you know something about that.
They're associated with the governor. I mean, one example is this past week, on August 1st, several hundred women participating in the movement took over the state television station. And that television station and the radio station associated with it became a very important part of the movement in terms of delivering information to movement participants. This past week, Sunday night, or actually Monday morning at dawn, the antennas for that station were attacked by police who drove up the hill and shot at the teachers who were guarding the antennas and shot at the transmitter, basically the antenna, taking that television and radio off the air. The response by the movement was to take over every radio station, AM and FM, in the city of Oaxaca. And the following night, when neighbors and teachers and other movement participants were outside guarding all of those stations, a convoy of over 30 trucks of what are being referred to as death squads sent by the state governor, some of them in police uniform and some of them not, some of them plain clothes with ski masks over their faces, drove past those radio stations and opened fire on the people who were guarding them. One man was shot 4 times in the back and later died in the hospital.
Wow. the Mexican police involved in this incident?
Yeah, one of the mainstream, there's two big national mainstream television networks in Mexico, TV Azteca and Televisa. They were both filming that night. Both of them were threatened by the police. The TV Azteca reporter had a police officer hold a gun to his head and threatened to, you know, until he handed over his tape. The footage that was shot by Televisa aired the following day and showed that some of the men in the trucks that were firing were wearing uniforms, state police uniforms.
So when you say that the teachers took over and the movement that sprung out of the teacher strike and the repression against it, those folks took over after the one TV station that they had taken over and were broadcasting from was attacked in this manner, that they then took over all of the AM and FM stations, radio and television in Oaxaca?
Just radio.
Okay. Has there been any other television stations they've taken over?
No. I mean, the mainstream, the local offices of the mainstream television they've moved their location because they're worried about being taken over. They're not seen very favorably by the movement. They would be sort of on the par of Fox Television in this country in terms of how they tend to cover social movements. So they moved their offices, but they haven't actually been taken over, as far as I know.
And when the movement took over these radio stations, when you say they took them over, exactly how did that happen? They just show up in the middle of the night when nobody's around, or how do they pull this off?
Well, that's a good question. They take over lots of things, and I've always wondered how they do it, but no, it didn't happen in the middle of the night. It actually happened Monday morning in response to the attack on the antennas. And it's basically just that they show up in such numbers of people. And if the doors are locked, they stand outside and make a lot of noise until the doors are open. If the doors are open, they just enter the building and say, we're taking this over. I mean, it's hard. Nothing like that would happen in the U.S. It's sort of hard to imagine, but they just show up and say, we're taking this over. You can stay or you can leave, but this is ours now.
So they're not armed. This isn't some kind of...
No.
So it's just the sheer popularity of the movement, the force of the movement.
Yeah.
So what has been the result of this kind of action that's taken place? You say that the movement has gained in popularity partly because of the level of repression that has been brought down upon these folks. Mm-hmm. What has been the result of taking over the radio stations? Have they been able to gain more strength through that? And what is their message when they're on these radio stations? What are they saying to people?
Well, I wasn't in Oaxaca when they took over all these radio stations, but I can talk a little bit more generally over the whole trajectory of the movement, the relationship between the use of independent media and popular media and the strength that the movement has gained. I mean, it started out with the teachers' community radio station that's existed for a year being taken off the air by a police attack on June 14th. That same day, students at the university took over the university radio station and operated that for over 6 weeks until that was taken off the air by an act of sabotage. But conveniently, the women had already taken over the state television station and radio station. And what I see is that they're using these media spaces to talk about the movement, but also to give voice to communities who typically don't have any voice in any of the mainstream media, inviting people from rural indigenous communities in Oaxaca to come and talk about how the governor's policies have impacted their communities and why they support the movement, giving a space to youth movements to come in and talk about why and how they're participating. The television station was showing documentaries around the clock of a nature that you would never see on the mainstream television. But the other key thing is that they're using these radio stations to keep people in the movement informed of what's happening. There's currently a large number of encampments around the city of Oaxaca because they've taken over every single government building in the city of Oaxaca, from the governor's house to the Senate building. And those are 24-hour encampments. And those people are basically out of communication with the rest of the movement, except for the little transistor radio that every encampment has. So you'll hear on the radio, for example, an alert will come out saying, there's some unmarked trucks getting close to the antennas. We're asking people to please go guard the antennas. And you go to the antennas and you see all of the neighbors climbing up the hill, women in their 80s with baskets full of coffee and bread, going up to the antennas to support the people who are guarding them. So they're using it also as a, as basically a logistical center for the movement to keep people informed of what's happening and where they're needed.
We only have a few minutes left, unfortunately. Can you just tell us a little bit about the film that you made that you finished in 2005, Granito de Arena?
It's a documentary about the history of the Democratic Teachers Movement in Mexico, which is a movement of public school teachers that began in 1979, demanding union democracy, but also demanding better resources for public education. And the narrative of the film is basically two parallel stories. One is the evolution of the movement parallel to the evolution of neoliberalism, economic globalization in Mexico, and its impacts on public education, and how this teachers' movement has had to respond to the those impacts of economic globalization on public education, like destabilization, defunding, privatization, that sort of thing. And it's a great context for what's happening now because it shows that this is a movement. I mean, in Oaxaca, for example, there's a teacher in every community, and they have a long history of working together with the communities fighting for justice in those communities. And now, you know, now comes a moment where the teachers' movement is attacked, and you see how those communities come out in support of the teachers, resulting in what's happening in Oaxaca right now. So the film gives some historical context to the current situation.
I'm speaking with Jill Friedberg. She's an independent documentary filmmaker who spent 2 years in Oaxaca documenting the Democratic Teachers Movement. And in 2005, she finished the film she was just describing, Granito de Arena. She has been going back and forth this summer to Oaxaca to cover what's happening there, and she just got back last week. Unfortunately, I only have a few minutes left, Jill, and I want to ask you, how can people view the film that you made? What kind of websites you might suggest that they go to find out more about the situation as well?
The website for the film, my production company is called Corrugated Films, and the website is www.corrugate.org, corrugate.org. I've also been maintaining a blog on that site with updates about the current situation in Oaxaca. You go to that site and click on Granito de Arena. It'll take you to that, to information about the film, but also to a link to the blog. I'd also recommend that people check out narconews.com and indymedia.org as some good sources in English about what's happening in Oaxaca. There's some people in Oaxaca who have been writing for Narco News. Also, ZNet, there's several articles up on ZNet about what's been happening in Oaxaca. And Global Exchange has some regular updates as well.
I'll mention all that information again at the very end. But before we conclude, can you just maybe talk about why you think people here should care about the teacher strike in Oaxaca, about the growing movement around that, and what's happening there now and what has been happening? Why should people here care? Why should they act?
People here should care because what's happening in Oaxaca and in Mexico can, and to some degree does happen here in terms of a lack of democracy and people rising up to demand democracy, to demand true representation. And also because a lot of the conditions that you find in Oaxaca that are feeding this movement are directly linked to U.S. economic policy in Mexico. The level of poverty in Oaxaca is directly related to the North American Free Trade Agreement and to U.S. transnationals exploiting natural resources in Oaxaca. It's a very popular tourist destination especially for left-leaning Americans. And I would encourage people who have been to Oaxaca, who have ever thought about going, not to just go there as if it were a sort of, you know, indigenous Disneyland. It's a state that suffers from a lot of injustices that are a direct result of economic policy generated in our country.
Thank you so much for joining me today and for your work, Jill. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about Oaxaca.
Of course. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
You too.
Bye. Again, that was Jill Friedberg. She is an independent documentary filmmaker who spent 2 years in Oaxaca documenting the Democratic Teachers Movement. Her film, Granito de Arena, which she finished in 2005, is available by going to corrugate.org. That's spelled C-O-R-R-U-G-A-T-E. Corrugate.org. Click on Granito de Arena to find out more about the film. Through clicking on that, you can also get to her blog. She puts regular reports about the situation in Oaxaca there. She also suggested checking out narconews.com, indymedia.org, znet.org, and globalexchange.org to learn more